All right. Hey, welcome back to The Edge. Today we have some great conversations planned. We're going to be asking some questions of Comcast business, getting an understanding of what they're doing in the Indianapolis area. We're also going to be talking to someone who has launched a lot of co-working facilities. See what I did there? Ed is a huge evangelist for learning from failure, the ringleader of FailFest, John Wexler. All that and Paul Poteet as well on Edge of Indy.
Your audio and video source featuring Indianapolis tech trends, marketing industry champions, and business innovation. This is Edge of Indy, broadcasting from Edge Media Studios. Let's get today's conversation started.
All right, welcome back to Edge of Indy. Hey, if you haven't tuned into Edge of Indy, again, shame on you. You don't know what you're missing. The show's focused on local Indianapolis movers and shakers, businesses, causes, trending topics that we want to bring to your attention. Also featuring people that and organizations that are out there helping make Indianapolis an awesome place to live and visit. So as we talk about regularly on the show, learn about local and also choose local. That's what Edge of Indy is all about. So if I could jump right into it and... Who am I asking permission? I'm actually asking permission of myself.
I don't know. Can you let yourself do it?
I don't know, man. We have Public Relations Director of Comcast Indiana, Michael Wilson. How are you doing today, sir?
I am well. Thanks for the invite.
You're more than welcome. More than welcome. Hey, I've been a long time subscriber to Comcast Business over the years, but this is you're in head of PR for Comcast Business, correct?
For Comcast Cable, I do business. I do. If you need somebody to talk about Comcast, I am your guy in Indiana.
You are all things Comcast.
I am all things Comcast.
That is fantastic.
Yeah.
That is fantastic. Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself, sir.
So basically, I do have a broadcasting background. I've been doing that for years. Left broadcasting about 2 years ago, almost now, and went over to Comcast. And basically, I get to be the head storyteller for Comcast. So it's pretty awesome. Because we do have a lot of good stories to tell, and hopefully we can walk you through some of those stories today.
Well, absolutely. So let's jump into it. As we understand, you've actually launched a new service called Machine Q.
Yes. This is like a totally new. This announcement came out last week, so we are on the edge of this announcement. See what we did there. See what we did.
So he's just falling right into place here. That's awesome.
So with this announcement with Machine Q, we're going to be talking about this. This opens up the discussion with okay, so we've made the things that have the internet in regards to the Internet of Things.
Sure.
How do we run the network? What kind of network do we run? So that's why we're going to do something different. And that was the significant part about this announcement that we made last week for Machine Q, is this product is essentially a network. And what this network does, which we're putting in Indianapolis, one of 12 cities across the country that we're putting in this particular kind of network, mm-hmm. and it'll be Indianapolis and the area, as it were, and mm-hmm. we're still kind of determining where exactly that's going to go. We're still in the very early stages. But what this network does is uses basically like a low power radio frequency in order to transmit short, small bits of data, which are going then to the cloud for storage, mm-hmm. and then picked up by say a business. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, to give you the example, if I am a company that does utilities, right, stormwater, and we'll just keep it simple, it's stormwater for now. So, if I want to measure amounts of stormwater or stormwater usage, or is this sewer being used, or when does the flow come out, or when has it been heaviest, and I just need short bursts of data.
Yeah.
Cell technology has a real hard time going underground. Since this doesn't use cell technology, it actually makes it a lot more efficient because it's low power. Mm-hmm. You don't have to worry about powering this thing all the time like you would if you were going to do like an HD video feed or something like that.
Right.
That needs a constant source of power.
Right.
This does not. So because we can do these measurements in bursts, we're able to use low power for this low frequency to send bursts of data, store that data, uh-huh. and then let whatever business or utility or whatever it happens to be compile their data, figure out what they want to do, and move ahead from there. So it's a pretty significant kind of a I hesitate to use game changer always just because I think we use it too often anyway.
Yeah.
But I do think that this is a very significant thing for Indianapolis, and I'm really excited about the possibility of clients that we have in the future for who would want, you know, to be part of this Machine Q project that we're doing.
You know, I have a little bit of a background, not background, but knowledge about some of these innovations that are happening. Up in Chicago, they're doing some interesting monitoring of some water threshold, and there are these... I can't remember the name of it, but they're little RF low-powered broadcast points. And what we're going to be seeing, what you're talking about right here, is a whole innovation of you don't have to wire it. You don't have to support an entire infrastructure. You can bring these devices in, and they're going to be very dialed in and unique to exactly what that data is needed on a regular basis, right? So it's going to be a customization of these type of monitoring services, right?
Exactly. Yep, absolutely. So it will be customizable. And you brought up Chicago. That's actually where we pre-trialed this, Chicago and then cool. Two other cities. So that is the technology. It's low-frequency radio signals, which require very little power. It's basically you can throw a broader signal with it too.
Okay.
So your footprint is actually bigger with this, which I think is also significant because you're saving power. It's sort of the bigger, better, and cheaper at the same time. It's less expensive to put these devices in.
Yeah. So where things, I mean, and that's kind of the evolution of the Internet of Things, like you're saying, is because you're not going to need that heavy signal. It's just a small bit of data. And it's very specialized what it's going to be bursting. So you're going to have this. I can really see kind of Raspberry Pi getting into this as well, and be able to have this type of this large network of little specialized bots, for lack of a better description,
Sure. Just
pinging what they're supposed to be pinging, and then you're collecting all that information at the cloud level, and then you can actually aggregate it into multi-purpose type of SaaS software, anything to be able to scoop up and read more into that, right?
Right, exactly. And actually, I was super happy to hear about the guest that's coming up. John Wexler's fantastic. And without people like him and technology leaders in Indianapolis and the surrounding area like him, I don't know that this would have necessarily been a market that Comcast would have looked at. But soon as I, you know, got word that like Machine Q was coming here, that this is going to be one of the launches, you know, immediately I got like the warm and fuzzies, and I was like, oh my God, we can actually do something with this. This is great. What a great announcement this is. So I think that because we have the backbone in place, we have the sort of the infrastructure, but that knowledge infrastructure too, right?
Right.
Where you have a tech-minded society, essentially, living in Indianapolis.
There it
I think
is.
That's the cool part about it, and that's what makes this significant. This is sort of, you know, I go back to like the old lunch meat logos of like lunch is what you make it. And we have the infrastructure in place, but we also have the knowledge in place. People want to do something with technology in Indianapolis. And I think that's the significant part because you need more than just a backbone. You need, you know, the muscle that's going to move it. You need everything behind it when you're going to launch a major project like this.
And you need an environment that is very receptive to those opportunities. And that's what we're talking about and that's what we've been talking about on Edge of Indy. Really why we made this show is because we're seeing these burgeoning opportunities and a lot of, I wouldn't say early adopters, they're bringing these concepts that are East Coast and West Coast concepts. And Midwest is really turning into the Silicon Prairie.
Yeah,
more than anything else.
I don't.
Right?
I think people may have laughed like 10 years ago if you're like, "Oh, Silicon Prairie, you know, elbow the guy next to him." But this is. I mean, this is a real thing, and we have. And you know, we talked about John Wexler, but I think there's a whole community that is really invested in entrepreneurs, and so I'm excited about all the possible products that we could see spun off and using a product like Machine Q in the future because the technology is here, the infrastructure is here, and we have the people that know how to develop those products here too. So, I mean, there's a big made in Indiana angle on this for me. And so I'm going to look forward to that quite a bit in the future.
Well, it's a great testament to the fact that a company such as yourself is bringing this technology. Now, you're doing this without any cost to Indianapolis. Am I understanding?
Right, yeah. This is Indianapolis will not pay for this product, right? So it's not like we didn't call up Mayor Joe Hogsett and say, hey, you owe us money for this. We're putting this thing in. This is a thing that we're going to install on the company dime. And we are then going to look for people who want to use this product once it's in. It'll be about middle of next year is where we're looking.
And again, that's another vote of confidence for the city of Indianapolis and the state of Indiana. So getting into another product that you're launching here, LoRaWAN, can you tell us about this project as
well? Yeah, that is part of the MachineQ thing. So the LoRaWAN is the technology that serves as the foundation for MachineQ. So when we have a discussion about LoRaWAN and what this technology is able to do, that is the underpinning of the MachineQ project. So think of MachineQ as a project, and then LoRaWAN as the technology behind that.
Kind of the framework of execution.
Exactly.
All right, fantastic. So speaking of new technology, you also have something else that's being cooked up right now.
We are spending a ton of money on like research and development right now. Yeah. It is ridiculous because this year we've launched I could go over the list, like DOCSIS 3.1, which brought ubiquitous speed of 1 gig throughout our network in Indiana. So any place virtually in the Indiana network, you will be able to get 1 gig speed as long as you're in that Comcast footprint. So we invested in that. Wi-Fi is another huge investment. We've made investments all over the place.
Wow.
For business, though, Smart Office is another thing that just launched this year.
Mm-hmm.
We did a trial run of Smart Office in Detroit. And I love the case study on Detroit because you had some high crime neighborhoods. You had some gas station owners that thought, you know, there's got to be a better way. They worked with our engineers. They worked with the Detroit Police Department and the Detroit Mayor's Office and put this project up. It's called Project Greenlight, right? But they're using Smart Office, which we now have in Indiana, I think probably about 6 months after the launch that they did, or the pre-trial launch in Detroit. And what this does, this is a whole network of cameras and storage, and it is, we call it prosecution quality camera technology, too.
Really?
Right, which is saved, and it's not going to be like saved somewhere that would be vulnerable, right?
Sure.
It's not like on a
VHS tape where they can...
Exactly, right? You just run a magnet over that, so the Smart Office technology is phenomenal. And what we've done in Detroit, and Detroit's kind of a special example of like, this is like the Smart Office on steroids of, you know, this is when everybody's putting their head together and working together a lot. This is the network that you can come up with. And so Smart Office is this great camera technology that we're using. And it really is like sort of a network control function for a different, like say you're a gas station owner, for instance, right?
Sure.
You're able to have access to that data. And I've actually heard of some examples of, so the data that comes through on the cameras, right? If you're a business owner and you wanted to say like, hey, we're a hair salon and we got some open chairs right now. Take a picture of what the camera's shooting at, use that as a photo on Twitter and say, hey, we got some seats open, come on by. So you can actually like use it as a marketing tool. You can use it as a security tool. You can use it, like there's all kinds of ways that you can use it. It's really just up to the creativity of the business owner to be able to pull that feed down, do a screen capture, and then, you know, use it from there. But again, it's high quality video, which is going to be better than your VHS.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even if you have Betamax. Yeah.
And that just shows the low cost, a low threshold now of this type of, I mean, who knew that we all kind of figured it, but I mean, the speed in which we have HD quality video content now multi-use type of networks to be able to deliver this type of content. It's permeating now. You've got the Internet of Things. You've got these layers and layers of new tech that are happening that are being smartly deployed.
Yeah.
And it's all dialed in for use as opposed to users having to figure out how to use that network. Now it's the inverse is that companies such as yourself are actually dialing in based on what the users are really needing, right?
Well, yeah, and there's a user investment angle to that as well, right? For residential customers, we have an app called My Account, right? So you can get on and you can pay your bill and you can, you know, kind of, and actually I just did a discussion today talking about XFi. And that's a product, again, this is a residential product that we launched, but XFi deals with, again, customers who in their house want to have network control without having to have like a doctorate in network control.
Sure.
So if there is one, I don't know. but you have these products that we're trying to make it like, okay, here's the technology, but then we understand that like you may not want to get, you know, that advanced degree in IT or whatever in order to figure out how to navigate this,
certainly,
you know, this system. So organize your router if you're a resident. Figure out how to do that, and we'll meet you halfway by giving you this tool that lets you, you know, here's your family member. So like on my phone, right? If I want to manage my network, if my kid hasn't done his homework yet,
there you go.
And I see his device on there,
throw it down,
turn him off. Sorry, buddy, you gotta get your homework done. So I can turn off his device, like specifically. So you want to have, I mean, without the whole crime and punishment angle within your house, and you know,
actually, you know what? I've embraced that.
Oh, okay.
Aaron's okay. And my kids hate me for it because literally, as we speak right now, I can shut down my entire house and hear the silent screams of every child as they're deliberately pulled off the net.
And there is like some certain satisfaction.
There's a gratification there.
Yeah, absolutely. with that level of demagoguery, there is a satisfaction. Absolutely. So it is important though to invest though, to make sure that you know, anybody out there can use the product, right?
Absolutely.
So for business, we're doing Wi-Fi Pro. And Wi-Fi Pro is, again, it's a network control. So you don't have to be an IT guy. You don't have to call an IT guy to figure this out. You know what your network is doing. You know who's on your network.
Right.
So you can figure these things out. And sometimes, like when I opened up my network with my XFi, it's like, well, I don't know what device this is. So we're going to turn that one off. And it's probably just like an old cell phone that's like sitting in a drawer or something like that. Who knows, right?
But or neighbors jumping on your network.
Or neighbors jumping on my network, right, which I thought was secure. So, you may think that you have all the security in the world, but it's important to be able to see what's on there. And it's important for business owners and residents alike to be able to see that.
Well, I mean, that goes into the space of where residents are. They have to be technologically savvy now. They have to... I mean, it's broadband is the internet. They have to be aware of what is going on in their house. As a parent, you have to know what devices are there. You have a new vigil. You have a new place to govern. It's the networking that's in your home, and to be able to provide a smart environment where you don't have to decipher things. I mean, I can live in MAC addresses just because I've been doing this for 25 years. I wouldn't want to wish that on anybody. So, I mean, be able to provide those type of user interfaces that can swiftly guide parents and be a tool as opposed to a hindrance. That's fantastic.
Right. So that is, kind of a priority for Comcast as a company nationally.
Mm-hmm.
But I think also locally, it's awesome to see so many good uses of the technology that we're able to use just for ease of use that we can deliver to our customers. It's pretty fantastic.
Very cool. So what kind of technological growth have you actually seen over time? And maybe not just in Indianapolis, but since you do represent Comcast, regionally across the country, are you seeing growth and adoption in almost like a topographical map?
Yeah, actually, that's an interesting question because there are some things that may not even fit what I don't want to put this down, but I think that there are ideas that people have, like of cord cutting, right? Like, oh, people are cutting the cord right now. Nobody wants cable anymore. We saw 10% growth in Indiana last year, just
really?
As a state. Yeah. So overall, if I'm to boil down our numbers for video subscribers, we had more video subscribers.
Really?
And it's because we're investing in the platform. It's like one of those if you build it, they will come kind of mentalities, right? So you present a product that people are able to use. Why should the TV be this, you know, when you think about like the amount of time that people spend on their phones, walking around with their phones, looking at their phones, I'm over here with my phone, I'm over there with my phone. TV sits in your house, maybe it's on for an hour in a day, right? Maybe two, right? When they start doing longer Game of Thrones episodes. So with that in mind, right, why not build a platform where the content is there but also easily searchable or presented to you already? Hey, you know, we noticed that you like this program. How about that program? We've all seen this on Netflix and Xfinity.
Amazon,
customers have seen it on X1, and Amazon customers see it on Amazon. Absolutely. So when you have those options and they're right there, you're more likely to have the TV on and you're more likely to be engaged in the programming. One of the things we found like with the Olympics coverage, right? And the X1 platform that we use is like super versatile.
Right.
So we dropped in all this Olympic content.
Mm-hmm.
And we found that people really liked to watch that Olympic content and made them watch the televised Olympics more because they were more invested in it. Oh, well, I know the backstory of, you know, so-and-so, so I can watch, you know, that athlete. That I was happy just to have archery on because I'm like the only guy in Indiana that was like, yay, archery. So,
I love the curling on the Winter Olympics.
Right. Curling is wonderful.
That just tickles me pink.
That's this year or next year?
Is it next year? It is, yeah, yeah. So I would look for a video platform, you know, on X1 for the Winter Olympics. Very I'd cool. be excited about that. See what kind of possibilities
that's,
we have.
That's heartening because obviously, I mean, we were hearing and have been hearing so many stories about just cutting the cord and leaving and just go Netflix, just go Hulu and what have you. I mean, there's an entire mindset there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because you know, as it's been conventionally understood, is that the basic cable plan wasn't really fractional to users' interest anymore. But so what you're doing is you're matching those interests with this type of X1 platform so it can be much more customized.
Exactly. And now we do stuff like if you have your X1 on, it'll show you traffic if you want it. So the traffic will be on the TV when you're walking by from the shower into the bedroom. And there's just it's about access. It's about finding the things that our customers want and you know, giving it to them. There's plenty of content out there, but finding it is pretty tough sometimes.
Very cool. Well, I'm a big believer in everything that you're doing there, and I truly appreciate the innovation and the stewardship that Comcast is actually providing for not only Indianapolis and Indiana, but also across the country. From Wi-Fi analytics, can you actually dive in and understand a little bit more about from a company's usage? Getting into understanding easy to understand behavior patterns of, now I'm about to go stalker of my employees, but can you actually see swells of bandwidth and this, that, and the other easily with what products you provide at the smart office level?
Right. As a business owner, if you want to track with like Wi-Fi Pro, if your employees are on that network, you would be able to track that, and you would be able to, not necessarily like per website, although there are settings for that as well.
Sure.
But you would be able to, so like I've got my X-Fi at home, right? Mm-hmm. I know for a fact, it's like I can look and see like, oh, okay, so 11 o'clock was the time where I said, okay, you can play video games now. So my son picked up his phone and started playing video games, and I could see the data usage go up under his user device.
Yep.
So since I was able to see that, I know, okay, well, he's in that given time. But if I see it go over to noon and I only told him 1 hour, then I can dial him up and be like, hey, buddy, can you get off the network now? Come on. You know, We had a deal.
It freaks them out. It really does.
It does. Again, that level of demagoguery to just, I am all knowing and I see your network, sir.
Push past that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think I'd want to be a kid nowadays. I think about it. Yeah.
It's like whack-a-mole. They keep on popping up everywhere.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, you have the household EMP that you can actually. Well, fantastic. Hey, you got some promotions going on right now. Is that right?
We've got promotions going on depending on where you live and what you're doing. I mean, there's always, I mean, for our 1 gig service, we've got some good promotions for that. Again, depending on where you live residentially, because we've got some markets are super competitive, and so we've really got to like stay competitive with the marketplace. But the technology is also expensive to install, too. So like with our DOCSIS 3.1 launch, giving 1 gig service to people, we've got some good promotions that I just recommend people go to Xfinity.com and check out some of the great deals that we have.
Fantastic. So you can actually connect with actual Comcast business on Twitter at ComcastIN. That's the Indianapolis or the Indiana Comcast brand, Xfinity.com. Can they also follow you? Do you have your brand out there?
I am one Mike Wilson. O-N-E.
Okay.
Mike Wilson. Cool. So you're free to follow me if you have any tech questions or anything like that. I can always steer people in the right direction. But I also monitor Comcast IN on Twitter. So if you send a question there, I'm happy to help out.
Cool. Let me, last question for you regarding Comcast and its involvement with the community. I mean, you're doing a fantastic job from a network and a technology purveyorship. Can you tell me some of the more philanthropic executions that's going on over from Comcast?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that we just did, we had a Comcast Cares Day took place in late April, but I was super proud of that one. Yeah. And I'll tell you why, because we did, like, from the corporate level, we did a lot of listening as far as what our employees wanted to do. Hey, what you guys are out in the community? What do you want to do? And we had one of our salespeople from Frankfurt said, you know what? I went through the Boys and Girls Club. I went through the Boys Club when I was a kid.
Sure.
You know, I had a tough family growing up. So it was nice to have that. I'd really like to be able to help the Clinton County Boys and Girls Club. Mm-hmm. And so we listened and we did a big project at the Clinton County Boys and Girls Club. But we did projects, you know, School for the Blind. We do a lot with Big Brothers, Big Sisters. We
do. Very cool.
So, yeah, we are in the community. We do smaller, though, community events all over the place. So we won't do like one huge Indianapolis event. We'll do like seven small Indianapolis
events. More strategic.
Yeah. I mean, whether it's strategic or not, I just feel like we make a bigger difference when you're helping out on a smaller level with smaller organizations that are, you know, maybe they're just trying to do this or that. Like, hey, we really want to pave or do landscaping or paint. And we're able to do that and get it done in a day. So I think stuff like that is cool. But we also do like leaders and achievers. So we're big on leadership, technology, grants, any kind of learning lab that we can help people out with. We just helped ARC of Northeast Indiana is the organization. And they had a group of special needs people that they identified as people who could be self-sufficient if they only had the skills to get online, figure that out. So we sponsored a lab, gave them $10,000. Here's a learning lab. And they were able to make some of the special needs citizens that they had there self-sufficient. So, I mean, identifying stuff where we can actually make a big difference and a big impact, even if it's 10 lives out of, you know, out of Fort Wayne, that's 10 lives that are now self-sufficient. I think that's awesome. So, yeah, we try to find good projects like that. And it's just, it's not about writing the check. It's about actually caring about what you're doing. And I think we've got a lot of employees that care. We all live in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
There's a lot of neighborhoods that we cover. We do make those investments, even if they're not huge ones. They're significant in the fact that there's a lot of heart behind it and a lot of work that goes into it.
Well, that's fantastic. It's great to be able to hear companies like that giving back to the community because, I mean, you want to make sure that you don't skip over those particular underpinnings of what it really means to be part of a community, especially what Indianapolis is doing, because there's so many organizations and so many worthy causes for that could benefit from support.
Absolutely.
So is there anything else that we can help you do today?
I think you guys are awesome. I love this setup. I'm totally impressed. I think this is wonderful. So,
thank you.
I'm not just a guest. I'm also a listener.
he kind of fit right in, didn't he? He didn't have the shades of gray that...
That's right. Blended right in. I was told about the motif earlier, so I was like, well, I better be on the monochromatic scale today.
Well, fantastic, Mike. It's been a pleasure meeting with you, and it is absolutely great to be able to hear about Comcast and what they're doing from an innovation standpoint and the vote of confidence for the city of Indianapolis and Indiana that we are a burgeoning technological hub. And I mean, we know that from a lot of different interviews that we have regularly on the show, and it's just exciting to be able to be part of this community right now.
Yeah, it is. It is awesome, and it is great the way that everybody pulls together around a cause here. I mean, there's the whole, and I talk to my wife about this all the time too. It's like there is a great work ethic to the Midwest that I love. And
absolutely.
And I think it is alive and well in Indianapolis and Indiana as a state. I mean, Hoosiers work hard. So I think it is so cool to be able to put a product out there and know that not only are the people installing the network going to be good people, but the people developing products for that network are going to be good, hardworking people. It's like that is all there all the way down the line, the people Very making cool. it happen, the people making those transactions. That is the cool thing about doing business in Indianapolis.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Thank you so much. We're gonna use that as the intro for the show.
We'll just record it. We're gonna record it and we'll just play it back every week.
All right,
week.
Mike. Stay true, and remember, sharing is caring. So we certainly want Comcast to share it live, and as we go into post production, lift up at least your segment, right?
Oh, we shared in pre-production, sir. So
I saw
It is on like Donkey Kong right now. I will tell you that.
Very cool. All right. Well, thanks so much, Mike, and we'll be watching you guys from afar. All right. Up next, we are happy to announce a new member of the Edge of Indy team, the broadcast team, the one and only, because if there were two, Brittany would freak out, Indianapolis's weatherman, Paul Poteet.
Real life, real stories. Let's see what's trending in Indianapolis. This is Paul Poteet on The Edge.
Well, looky there. we've got...
Oh, I think he's muted there.
Oh, we got him... We are controlling.
I've got your Hoosier work ethic right here.
There you go.
Wow.
This is the 200th thing I've done today, but this will be the best thing that I've done today.
Absolutely. Now, you got to save the best for 3 p.m. on Wednesdays, right?
Yep.
Yeah. This is a brand new thing for regular Edge viewers, such as, you know, Mike just now. but don't I have more seniority than Mike? I mean, I've been on a show with you before.
Literally, somebody, so. Can we mute him again? Well, so Paul, it's great to be able to have you on the show. And can you tell our listeners a little bit about some of the conversations we've had and why you're literally over my shoulder right now?
Because I'm watching you the way that you watch your kids when they use the internet. After listening to the last 10 minutes, I'm glad I don't live with any of you people.
It's kind of creepy, man. And in fact, I have you chipped now. You've been in my office twice.
Well, let me look at my hand. That has to do with one of the stories we're going to talk about in a moment. You know, we got together a few weeks ago. I mean, this show that you're doing now, this internet show, this video show, whatever you want to call it. These days, I always tell people I don't think in terms of TV and radio anymore. I haven't for several years now. It's microphones or cameras, and it doesn't really matter. You were talking a few moments ago, I think, about all the different access points, or the more access points, the better. And that's the way I've been kind of running my career for since about 2009. And we've connected before, and me telling you that story on a show. And we just thought we had a mutual interest in me being a part of a show that talks about things indie and is reflective of the people in Indianapolis, and that I would pop in from good old Studio B and share some wacky stories that people in Indy, you know, have responded to online with me. And also, of course, bring you the forecast.
That's right.
Yeah, that's a foregone conclusion. We had to have the forecast, but you're absolutely right. When we thought weird and wacky, we went to Paul Poteet.
That's right. Wacky / weather, you know your brand.
I'm channeling some Johnny Carson right now. I don't know what the heck.
A little weird, a little wild. We'll talk about a couple of stories that I've shared online lately that I've gotten a lot of response, and that, you know, just a lighthearted moment or two.
Fantastic. Well, while we jump into some of those stories, you got a couple of weird ones real quick. So take it away, man.
It's so funny that you were you guys were talking about all of this, you know, technology and what you could do with employees, because there's a tech company in Wisconsin that is offering now to microchip their employees. Are you doing that with people at the Edge Studios yet?
We won't talk.
I woke
about
up and I had a scratch on the back of my neck.
It's just an alien it's just an alien abduction. Don't worry about it.
50 people. Well, they say it's voluntary now, but 50 employees have already signed up. They can make in-house purchases. Open no more. Well, you have to, you know, worry about that last quarter for the, you know, the cheese and cracker thing out of the vending machine. They can make purchases, open doors, and unlock office equipment. They'll put a little RFID. What is it, RFID?
Yeah.
Thing between your just that size that you see right there on the screen between your thumb and
your forefinger.
I don't know. To me, it's totally creepy, and maybe it's some of the places that I've worked at in the past, but I wouldn't do it in a million years, at least knowingly. That way, I guess, you know, you wouldn't have to, if somebody leaves on bad terms, you wouldn't change the combination or change the locks. You just disengage them like a USB peripheral.
Wow.
We have safely removed you from our devices.
Now, we haven't had this issue here, but I've had other office settings where people steal other people's lunches out of the refrigerator. So I'm wondering if this is another way you can combat that, and you can.
So you have you have a sensor on the fridge, and you have a sensor on the employee. Connect the dots, literally.
That's right,
Joe. We've noticed that there was an incident in the bathroom that had to be a good 23 minutes, according to our sensors. And I hate to bring it up around review time, but really, not as productive as we'd like you to be.
Oh my lord,
they say it doesn't have GPS in it or anything like that. But again, you know, that's
they say that.
That's
the future. That's the upgrade.
Yeah. So we'll see how that goes. So that's one side of tech.
Oh,
here's an interesting story in the news. You talk about businesses and what motivates people to do a good job. Mm-hmm. I guess even in in personal life, sometimes to motivate you to do something real healthy, you just have to toss somebody money, because this is the story about a gambler. He'd been on a really hot streak. He'd, you know, made like $100,000, but unfortunately, then all of a sudden, it suddenly stopped. And then he started eating and started eating. He put, all of a sudden, he puts on like 50, 60 pounds, and he's up close to, you know, somewhere into the 200s. So okay. Not only is he down, you know, he's down on his luck, losing money, but he's also put on all this weight. Well, he gets together with some other guys who like to wager, I guess, and they offered like $1 million. They pulled some other, you know, money from other, I don't know what you would call them, investors or people that would guarantee the money.
Yeah.
If he would get his body fat down below a certain percentage over a certain period of time, he would get like he would get out of the deal about $500,000. Wow. Okay. Yeah. So he took the bet, and the bet was to get down to less than 10% in 6 months. Eventually, they had $1 million in wagers. Look at that before and after picture. Isn't that crazy?
Oh my gosh. He
started dieting and exercising. He realized he couldn't do it alone. So he reached out, found a personal trainer. 3 months into it, he's down to 13.5% body fat. He said, all I did was eat, train, and rest. That's all I did.
Yep.
And
I would too if I had $500,000 on the line. Sorry, Aaron.
He came in. It puts, you know, this is his job, I guess. It puts, in a way, putting food on the table. Putting food on the table he won't eat.
I remember the story. It was probably a couple years ago. There was this guy who was putting that, what people say you practice for, was it like 10,000 hours and you become a master at something. And
right.
So this guy was, he was practicing golf. And so that was just his full-time job. He just wanted to see if he could make a PGA tournament. So he's just practicing. And he had this whole website and this blog about logging his hours. So he was like, you know, whatever I saw it, he was like hour 2,250. Right. And he was logging what his score was, how he improved from hour zero to that time. So
But this is even more messed up, because on the other side of this, positively, everybody's betting on him be able to succeed, but there is a bookie that's going to happen down the road here betting that he won't, and they'll probably get more money. All of a sudden, you're betting on somebody's psyche and willpower.
Yeah.
And health. Yeah, you're betting against somebody's...
And then the bookie's showing up with a big eclair going, no, you really want this? this could be the downfall of society, man.
Well, he did it. I mean, he got it done at 8.8%.
Wow.
He dropped 70 pounds, so if you do the math, $7,000 for every pound he lost.
That's better than like the best filet, man.
Well, it says he celebrated by going out to eat for pizza. Okay, I got the cash.
I got
okay,
the cash. I got this one. Pie's on me. Wow.
Yeah. So anyway, that's the that's what really motivates people, I guess, in the end is money. One final story, you know, that's sort of weather related. There was a heat incident on the roadways of, well, I guess this is traffic and weather together, because Washington State troopers had to respond to a semi truck on the interstate that started to lose its load of bread dough. And the heat then, look at that, caused the yeast to rise on the road. And then all of a sudden, they found a gambler who was driving up to the seat.
I got a guy. This loaded up of it. Literally, it's cooking on the side of the road. Wow. So,
there you go. A little traffic and weather to together to finish things up.
How many puns could we come up with this?
Oh my gosh! They in the Twitter, you know, thread from that, it was, you know, right away. Doe, a deer, female deer.
Oh my gosh! Look at the memes. Oh my gosh!
You need to be an early riser to keep up on this.
Yeah. Doe or not, or donut. There is no rye.
It's tailor made for Twitter.
It absolutely is. All right. Well, those are some great stories, Paul. What you got in the perspective of weather for this week?
Yes, the 7-day forecast is kind of nasty for tomorrow. Thursday's weather will be wet, and the one thing we do not need around here is more rainfall. Looks like about an inch of rain during the day on Thursday. 87 today. Today it's getting more humid again, and tomorrow it's going to be muggy and rainy. Maybe done by Thursday night and Friday. We might have a stray shower or two on Friday, but look at that awesome weekend. Saturday and Sunday, sunshine, upper 70s, lower 80s. The humidity will go back down again Friday night going into the weekend, and at least we've got another dry stretch of day starting on Saturday, but tomorrow looks a little wet. Stay inside, have some comfort food.
Just don't pick the bread off the highway.
I am so hungry I could eat remains from a semi-truck. You never want to be that guy.
Well, Paul, it's enjoyable, man. Thanks so much. And we're certainly going to look forward to our, you know, this kind of engagement going on in the future. Love to have you over my shoulder. It's fantastic. And
goodbye, everyone.
All right, man. We'll see you next week. Thanks so much, Paul.
This is Edge of Indy, showcasing Indianapolis tech trends, marketing industry champions, and business innovation. Broadcasting from Edge Media Studios. Now, let's get back to today's topic.
All right. Hey, John Wexler, thanks for being in studio.
The way he said that 200-pound number, I was just, you know, I don't really have a problem with that.
I know, right? I was like, well, what can I get there?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Sounds good to me. Hey, look, until you've said you weigh 1/8 of a ton, you're nothing. Okay?
Oh,
so 250 is I think, the number to, yeah.
Oh, yeah, but can you think about the guy now? Now he's literally, every pound he's worth $7,000, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, therein lies a huge amount of, a long series of jokes right there, especially if he's married. No, never mind. All right. So tell us, in the spirit of Fail Fest, what was the last thing that you failed at, no matter how big or small? You got to give us the latest fail.
Latest fail was 30 minutes ago. I failed to walk by a plate of Chick-fil-A nuggets at Launch Fishers without eating one.
And you weren't in that bet with that guy.
Exactly. It wouldn't have mattered. I still would have probably stopped and picked it up. So.
All right. Well, I'm glad. Well, I don't know how to answer that. Well, we have that out of the way. Tell us a little bit about Fail Fest, what it is, and how it's grown over time.
Yeah, so we're in our fourth year of Fail Fest. Very cool. Website is failfest.us, and it really started as just kind of a conversation at Launch Fishers. We were talking about we were going to actually do a fall festival, and I just kind of blurted out, we don't need a fall fest, we need a Fail Fest, and it kind of... We really started riffing on that idea and started thinking about all the things that we've ever done that have been successful and how failure really paves the way. And so we thought, you know, if we could get people that are obviously successful to talk about things that didn't go their way one time and what they learned from it, we might have something to talk about.
Very cool. Very cool. I mean, you learn so many lessons from failure as opposed to a string of successes.
Well, exactly. If you think about a world where we only did the things where we knew we wouldn't fail, we'd be in a pretty boring place.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You look at a product like WD-40. I talk about that all the time. Norm Larson created that. He was a chemist, and it took him 40 times, right?
Yeah.
Hence WD, water displacement, 40th attempt. And you know, the poor guy sold it for $20,000 at the end of the at the end of the game, and no residuals and no royalties. So be persistent. You know, you got to be smart, but also have some good business advisors. I think is an important part.
And that sharp companies literally embrace that, especially if you're in a larger company. If they can actually embrace failure as part of their ecosystem, that they know people are going to fail, things are going to fail, and then be able to have that as a reinforcement and a learning opportunity. 3M obviously is one of the best examples of that. The Post-it note guy, he literally was trying to create an incredibly sticky adhesive, and he ended up bringing something that was so light that they didn't know what to do with it, but he actually submitted it into the culture of 3M, and they found a way to utilize that to a great degree. It's one of the most known brands.
Yeah, I mean, and if you can capture in your corporate culture or your startup culture how to embrace failure, you're well on your way, right? I mean, the terms of fail forward, fail fast, I mean, it gets kind of worn out. But the really important thing is that as business owners, as executives, as managers, as peers, as, you know, husbands and wives and brothers and sisters for that matter, right? You need to understand that we're not going to get it right every time.
Right.
And in the times that you do fail, you oftentimes remember the lesson a whole lot more than you would if you were just kind of going through your day and ultimately grow and learn. So that's what it's all about.
I was just reflecting on a few skin knees in my past.
You guys both had this look in your eyes like, oh my gosh, he's talking about that.
No, absolutely. So you have an event coming up. That's Fail Fest. The fourth version of it is coming up September 21st at Union 525, right?
Yeah, we're excited to have a home for Launch Indy in downtown Indianapolis, right? Absolutely. Here in the Union 525. What John Hurley has done in pulling that together is nothing short of a miracle.
Oh, yeah.
I've done that kind of stuff before. I know how hard it is. And if you haven't had him on yet, you really need to get him in the house here. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Fail Fest will be in the gymnasium. They call it the gym.
Yep.
And it looks like it's straight out of Hoosiers. I mean, I know, right? You've been in there. Isn't it great? So we're going to have a series of speakers. We actually have a call out right now for people that think they have something that they want to share with others. Oh, so I would encourage anyone that has a story, a success that was built on a prior failure. Mm-hmm. We'd love to hear from them at failfest.us.
You know, I think today's culture is a lot more accepting of failure because there was a stigma. I mean, everybody, it was we should not be ever expressing what you've experienced and what type of failures have, because it could literally give you a black eye in the perspective of VC capitals and what have you. But there's a whole new embrace. If you haven't failed, right? That VC doesn't want to be the one that's actually funding that soon to be failure. So it's actually very good to be able to have a couple failures behind you, because it shows that you've learned in the progress, right?
Yeah, and I think you're right. And I think investors, business partners, future ventures, right, that you may be involved in, they see those lessons learned as equity that they can quite frankly trade on, right? I mean, you're improving your chances of success. If you've had a couple of those where you've skinned your knees, and you're right, a lot of venture capitalists won't look at someone if they don't have a couple of experiences under their belt, and it's pretty rare to see anyone that bats 1,000, right? You're most of the time you're going to skin your knee in some form or fashion, right? I've called some of my ventures I've called getting hit by the pitch, right? It stings a little bit. You end up getting on base and maybe advance the game, but at the end of the day, there's an awful lot of failure in success.
Very good.
So this will be, is it the third?
Number four.
Number
actually,
four.
Yeah. And then we've also done one in Terre Haute. We're going to be doing one later this fall with Shelly Klingerman and her crew, out at Launch Terre Haute. And then we're talking to some out-of-state venues as well that have shown some interest in having a Fail Fest in their location.
Very cool. Well, I mean, for those who have actually participated in previous Fail Fests, and we were actually there at the original one. We did 19 interviews.
That was phenomenal. Do you remember what happened at the end?
Yes, yeah, it was awesome.
The best. In fact, there's some way we need to get that back out.
Yeah, we've got that. Literally, the lights went off in the middle of the interview with John, the last interview of Fail Fest. Power gets pulled because they're closing it up, and we continue the interview in the dark.
Yep. Because we were on batteries with the audio.
Exactly.
Yep. Lights, everything went out, but the cameras and the batteries ran, and we just closed it up.
Yeah, we got to pull that back out. Yep. That was awesome. So tell us some of the things you've changed and how you think it'll provide more value to attendees this year.
Well, what we're doing is we listen every year. We ask our attendees for feedback. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that continually comes up is they want more interactive opportunities. They want to feel a little more connected.
Sure.
So we're creating more opportunities for that, more roundtable discussions, Q&A format type opportunities. But, you know, we're looking at probably 300 to 350 people in the gymnasium. And we're going to have 17 to 20 speakers. And already some amazing folks that have raised their hands and said they want to be part of this. So we're looking forward to it.
So are there any other notable failures or fails that you can really glean insight from, inspiration from? Maybe even some of the as you've exercised. I mean, you do so much, John. You really do. And Launch Indy and Launch Fishers and Launch Indiana. I mean, you gotta call that huge wins for the state of Indiana. And that's we got to thank you personally about that, because it does give a great threshold for a lot of startup companies and a lot of companies that don't have the expenses yet to be able to take care of their own physical offices. And you're bringing a lot of people together. But I mean, can you share any of the failures of just getting Fail Fest moving regularly in front of this is the fourth iteration. You're passing that 3-year mark, which is fantastic. But some insights of putting on an event like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that when we started this, the thing that we said is, you know, what's the worst that could happen here, right? we could fail.
Yep.
You fail at Fail Fest, who's really even going to know, I guess, was the thought. And so, you know, I do think you need to, you know, approach your work with diligence, right? You know, thinking through everything. But at the end of the day, you've got to not be afraid to fail. And you have to take those risks. You have to step out a little bit. It's what we do with all of the work that we do statewide through Launch Indiana, you know, Launch Fishers, our IoT lab, which is upcoming, Launch Indy. Yep. These, every one of these are pretty significant risks for all parties, right? I'm one part of a team.
Right.
And everybody that's involved has some skin in this game. I'm the one that's out there talking about it and trying to, you know, make things happen. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, there's a whole supply line of people that come behind me to help make this stuff happen.
And they're all embracing the risk.
Yeah, absolutely. And we all know that we're taking risks to do this thing, whether it's the elected leaders and the staffers that support this, the chambers of commerce, or, you know, any number of folks that are involved in helping make this stuff happen.
To kind of further our listeners' awareness of Launch Fishers and the launch properties, just describe Launch Fishers and Launch Indy, for example, of what they are and the value that it represents to entrepreneurs.
Yeah, no, it's happy to do that. So at Launch Fishers, we're in 52,000 square feet. That's kind of the flagship, the first location. Yep. We have over 600 members, and they are pursuing all sorts of innovation-driven enterprises, ranging from software and wearable technology to big data to health analytics, as well as service providers to these companies. So it's its own little ecosystem there. We have a coffee shop that serves as kind of the primary point of contact. We have a 1 gig connection, a theater that seats 300 people.
That's awesome.
Classrooms and meeting rooms. It's basically a place for entrepreneurs to do their thing. Mm-hmm. We've replicated that same thing on a smaller scale in Indianapolis, 10,000 square feet. But we also have the gym available to us, the courtyard there in the middle of Union 525.
They've got slides.
It's slides. We're going to do a GoPro video of that, and we'll give it to you guys and try to get it on the show here. But, and then the IoT lab that's opening up here later this year, grand opening first quarter of next year. That is a 24,000 square foot facility.
Oh, wow.
All focused on Internet of Things. So electrostatically coated floors and soldering irons, oscilloscopes, all the things that you would expect in a little electronics lab, basically.
Oh, my gosh.
So 86,000 square feet under roof. We have a team of about a dozen right now that make all this happen, and everything is focused on innovation-driven entrepreneurship and making that happen in the state. We think it's the greatest opportunity to bring wealth into our communities, right? Those communities that support innovators, they're going to sell to the rest of the world. So you look at the software that's created here, the technology, and you're selling around the world. That money comes back into our state to go to the employees, to the investors, and then be circulated inside of those communities. So that's the whole point behind this.
There's also something else that happens at Launch Fishers. It's and the launch properties is that you have the mentorship of different individuals that have been in business, and they can help mentor and guide some of these entrepreneurs. You actually have an entire, that's what Launch Indiana is built to be, right? Is yeah, an entire stewardship.
Yep, mentorship program, one to one. We also do group programming.
Very cool.
So we can come and do an event on Lean Startup and have, you know, 20 people in the room, capture that on video, reuse it. It's evergreen content.
Yeah, absolutely.
How do you raise money for your company? Evergreen content. How do you, you know, handle basic contracts and employment law, IP, all this type of stuff is evergreen content. So we try to do programming based around things that will last for an extended period of time.
Yep.
And then we do entrepreneurial mapping. Jason Whitney runs this program for us. We go into communities throughout the state of Indiana. Mm-hmm. We identify the entrepreneurs, the investors, the supporters of the entrepreneurs, and basically the entire ecosystem within a given community. And then we publish that map for all of that community to try to get better connected.
Mm. That is very cool. You also extend out opportunities to bring in interested parties from other countries as well.
Yeah. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that couldn't have possibly have been on the business model canvas, 4 years ago.
Absolutely.
But we've now for 4 years, we've been involved with the Indiana University Global Business Institute, and we had 100 students up. They were all Middle East students, so from Egypt, from Morocco, from Tunisia, Pakistan. They were brought over with the State Department. Coca-Cola sponsors the program, and I call it using entrepreneurship as a force for good, right? We're all connecting on a common language of entrepreneurship and building strong communities through entrepreneurship and innovation. It was fantastic. The week after that, we had the Mandela Washington Fellowship in with 30 students, or actually these are young entrepreneurs from Africa, 20 nations represented, all connected within our entrepreneurs at Launch Fishers. And we just completely take this notion that strong communities start with this entrepreneurship and innovation vein. Mm-hmm. Economic self-sufficiency is a core component of any vibrant and growing community. And we think if we can share this not only, you know, in Lagodi and LaGrange, but get it across the ocean as well. Yeah. I think we make, you know, make the world a better place.
That is huge. And I mean, you're setting the seeds of freedom and self-image. I mean, if you can do it yourself, right?
Yep.
Then, I mean, that's where communities just thrive because they can be self-sufficient. They can actually, I mean, this is about some inverse missionary
mission type of focus.
That's fantastic.
And it feels that way to us, right?
Yeah,
people on my team, right? We're all very passionate about this. I can tell you that, you know, I'm a veteran. I served our country, and I think, you know, we need to really
–
well, thank you. I mean, thank you for my college education because that's how I paid for it. But I think we need to revere our veterans and those who serve. Those who run the other way when trouble's going down.
Right.
But the next most patriotic thing we can do is start a business. And I think entrepreneurship is really what built our great country. And so if we can help innovation-driven entrepreneurs do their thing, we have a great chance to build strong communities throughout our state and across the nation.
Oh, that's fantastic. Fantastic. All right. So we have the, and this could be a much larger conversation. You realize that, especially with the stories that you come across, because I mean, there's a lot of stories of all these different entrepreneurs and all these different areas across the state. On top of that, just the fail festers that come through and share, drop incredible nuggets of wisdom each and every time Fail Fest happens. So it's fantastic, and we certainly want to help tell your story continually because you are one of the top innovators here that are bringing the companies together and bringing entrepreneurs together. So thanks so much on that.
My pleasure.
You've got the event coming up. September 23rd?
Yep, September 22nd.
22nd, I'm sorry.
That's a Friday. 23rd, I think we'll all be watching cartoons. But, so 22nd, actually it's 21st, 21st, if I remember correctly.
See,
that's
see
a
what
Thursday.
I did there? I just messed with him.
22nd, September 22nd is our grand opening for Launch Indy.
Yeah,
so we're doing those back to back.
Got it.
And the 21st, failfest.us. Tickets will go on sale here very shortly.
Mm-hmm.
More importantly, we're really looking for those in the area and those who will be in the area on that day, for that matter, that would like to talk about their success and how it was fueled maybe or the road was paved by failure. So anyone that's interested in speaking, I'd love to hear from them.
So so we'll certainly put all the links on the show notes as we publish the podcast and as well as in the comments on the video page. You can track down and you got to go out there. We're a member of Launch Fishers, and you got to go out there and check out the facility at Fishers. It's fantastic, and you're right. Hurley did an incredible job with Union 525 when we were out there. How quickly they were moving at right before NX3. I mean, that was incredible.
Yeah.
And you're about to launch Launch Indy. Certainly take time if you're an existing business owner or if you're an entrepreneur. Go out to these spaces and check out the resources that are available for you. You can track everybody, check all the launches at Launch on Twitter at Launch Fishers, as well as Launch_Indy. Just look for Launch Fishers and Launch Indy on Facebook, be able to find what's happening on a regular basis, and check out failfest.us for the upcoming Fail Fest and also some retro perspective of previous Fail Fest as well, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Excellent.
And Aaron, before we wrap up, I do want to commend you on the work that you're doing because this production value and what you're bringing to the table is super important on the storytelling component of any ecosystem. And I think we're really fortunate to have you here in the Indianapolis area. When we met a few years ago, I was blown away by what you brought to the table then. This next iteration with your studio here and the production value, your team, is quite impressive. So I'm happy to see it on the scene.
Thank you very much, man. That's very nice to hear. I appreciate that greatly. Kind of warms my heart.
Oh,
John.
Man. Come on, man.
I don't want to be in between.
Fantastic. All right. So go check out all the events that we're talking about on Edge of Indy regularly. Go check out Fail Fest. Go check out Launch Indy. There's a lot of great businesses already there that you should be aware of. So as we say every time, thank you so much for everybody who contributed to the show. Check out Comcast Business. Look for some of those smart products that they're talking about, as well as, hey, track Paul Poteet, because he's weird and wacky all over the place. It's certainly great to be able to see everything come together this show. Remember, choose local and choose local often and get involved with Indianapolis. This is Aaron Sparks and Tom Broadbeck. I'll speak for you. Saying goodbye, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.